One of the advantages of difficult questions is that they are susceptible to many sermons. And the answer you gave to a question last year or the year before that, doesn't have to be the answer that you give this year. And so I would like to give you a new answer to a question that I have answered before in other ways. Because having spent the last couple of years studying the story of David, as you know, if you received the book, and if you didn't, it's available on Amazon. And in finer bookstores everywhere, except that there aren't finer bookstores anywhere anymore. But if there were, it would be. But having studied the story of David gave me a different kind of insight into the fate of Moses. Because one of the questions that commentators return to again and again and again is this question of ultimate frustration. God comes to Moses when Moses is a young man. He says, lead the Israelites. And what does Moses say? I don't want it. God says to him, you don't have a choice. You must lead them. I will be with you. Aaron will be your mouthpiece. You will go to Pharaoh. You will liberate them. You will take them across the desert. And you will bring them to the promised land, to the land of Israel. Despite Moses' objections, God literally forces him to do it. Along the way, he endures the betrayals of all the people who are close to him, his sister Miriam, his brother Aaron, the people Israel. And then in the weeks that we are studying now, at the end of the book of Devarim, Moses, who has gone through this enormous ordeal, can see the land in front of him, and God says, you die here. And it seems so unfair. Especially because the reason given for Moses' death seems so trivial. So he hit a rock. I mean, really, in the catalog of sins, hitting a rock is pretty low. And yet, Moses does die, and the commentators feel obligated to find a reason, and there are many, and I won't rehearse them all, because studying the life of David made me see a different take on it that some of the commentators talk about, that actually, in a powerful way, also gives us an insight into the Jewish tradition, and even into this time of year. Because as I studied the life of David, I kept returning to the other major figure in the Jewish tradition, was how David is different from Moses. David, too, is chosen and is anointed. David, too, has all sorts of difficulties with the people. But really, the Jewish tradition is, I don't want to say divided, because that makes them sound oppositional, but it runs along two tracks. There is Moses, Mount Sinai, the desert, and the law. And there is David, Mount Zion, the government, and the land. And they're very different. The romantic period of our history is the desert. You may not think so. You might think, if you were coming to the Torah for the first time, you would think, wow, the climax of this story, the best part of it is going to be when they enter the land. And it'll be like coming to Oz. They'll be singing and dancing and joy and milk and honey, and it's not like that at all. Joshua comes into the land, and there's fighting, and there's some progress, and there's gradual assimilations of people, and negotiations, and contracts, and more fighting, and boundary disputes. In other words, it's not at all what people said when they were in the desert. Because the desert is a time with no ultimate responsibilities. Yeah, you're supposed to be nice to each other, but really in the desert, you're going to be in a different place tomorrow and the place after that. The desert is the childhood of the Jewish people. And we all know, yes, children have problems, but they don't have the weight of responsibilities that they will have when they get older. It's a different kind of problem. And Moses is leading a people who are growing up, who are not yet there. And then when you study the life of David, you realize David has to mobilize armies. He has to fight on the border. He has to deal with multiple rebellions against his rule, including, by the way, from his own children, which is not uncommon in the history of kingships, as you may know. And he has to set up a state, which is why we have two mountains in our history, Sinai and Zion. Sinai represents the chuppah, the wedding, the receiving of the law. And Zion represents the settling of the land. And as I read it, I realized that David and Moses were Israel and us. We're in the diaspora. Ultimately, we don't have responsibility for the state of Israel. Our children don't fight in the army. We don't pay taxes. We're walking through the desert. And the desert is the romantic place. It is the easier place. It is the place where you don't have to make the difficult moral decisions that you have to make if you're settling a land. Balzac once said that every great fortune is founded on a crime. If you go back far enough, you will find out that somewhere there was some nefarious activity that led to that fortune. It may or may not be true of fortunes. It is certainly true of countries. Every country that is founded is not founded by a peaceful migration of people who say, oh, this is a lovely place, let's set up a land here. It's found in difficulty and often in bloodshed. And that's the David part of our history. And those of us who live in the diaspora find ourselves uncomfortable with Israel sometimes, not only because of this policy or that policy, but the very fundamental split that we're lucky enough to live in the romantic bubble of Jewish history. In the diaspora, where we don't have the responsibilities of power and we don't have the mandates of armies. Where we feel safe and secure, where there aren't enemies at our borders, where we're surrounded, go figure, by Canada and Mexico and two oceans, which has got to be, by the way, historically the most fortunate situation of any land that ever existed. And that being the case, we realize that Moses dies because Moses can't be the leader that's required in the land. It needs someone different. Someone essentially unromantic. Someone who's not a prophet, but who's a statesman. And as we all know, the art of being a statesman or a politician is a very different art from that of being a prophet. A prophet can make grand declarations, but it doesn't have to make treaties. A prophet can have moral absolutes, but he doesn't have to negotiate. And that's what you needed in the land. So David does that, as do all the kings of Israel, but Moses can say, this is the law. And stick to it, because he's in the desert. That same division that exists in Jewish history runs through every human heart. There are parts of us that feel inspired and elevated, and we're ready for the new year, and then all of a sudden, we have to find parking. We think we're going to do repentance, and then someone really annoys us. In other words, reality rubs up against the grand dreams, the prophetic ideas. When someone told Solomon Schechter, who was a person before he was a school, you may not know that, but he was. Solomon Schechter was actually a remarkable man. That's another sermon. He was a scholar and a teacher and the first major president of the Jewish Theological Seminary. And someone once told him they believed in prophetic Judaism. And he said, you cannot live on oxygen alone. In other words, part of the struggle of this year is part of the struggle of the Jewish people, which is you have to actually end up taking responsibility for your decisions in the real world. And the real world is not only a world of declarations and of promises. It's a world of negotiations and of compromises. It's a world of fighting. It's a world of taking and giving back. It's a world that makes us uncomfortable because the real world is uncomfortable when you compare it to your dreams. In that sense, what we were for most of our history was the people of Moses who wanted to become the people of David. We were the wanderers who wanted to have the responsibilities of the state, but then when we got the responsibilities of the state, we said, oh my God, this is not so easy. There's a lot of messy stuff that goes on when you become David. And if you read the story of David, which you can get on Amazon, I meant the Bible, of course, you'll see there's a lot of very messy and uncomfortable stuff and stuff that seems shameful and difficult, but that's the reality of what it means to carry your dreams into the world. Moses wasn't the person to do that. So in a sense, God was doing him a favor, having him die in the desert and letting Joshua, who was a much less romantic figure and a much less exalted figure, but a much better leader for the people in the land, letting Joshua, who was essentially a warrior, lead the people into the land of Israel. And that's what he did. It's not that any people or any person has to give up on their dreams. Certainly no Jew would ever say that. In probably his most quoted single statement, remember, Ben-Gurion said, any Jew who doesn't believe in miracles isn't a realist. So it's not that we give up on these grand notions or the possibility of miracles or dreams, but we have to be ready as individuals and as a people to know that the world will inevitably collide with those dreams. And to be a dreamer alone is to be an irresponsible human being who actually can't get things done in this world. So, each of us inside ourselves has to be a little bit of David and a little bit of Moses. A little bit of a dreamer willing to get our hands dirty. Someone who really does believe that you can get to the other side of the desert, but knows that when you do, the land's not going to be all milk and honey, no matter what they told you when you left Egypt. As we approach Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, to do tshuva, to do true repentance, means to do it both with the resolution of the desert and also the realism of the land. To do it knowing what you hope for, but also what it is that you can honestly achieve day after day after day. It is in part to know that we are forever works in progress and that there is no perfection in this life, and to accept it, even if we never make peace with it. So as this year arrives, I hope that we will take inspiration from Sinai and from Zion, from Moses and from David, from dreams and from deeds, and have a happy, a blessed, and a good new year. Shabbat Shalom.